Hey, next on the T Nation, thanks for tuning in to part two of this week's show featuring Jihei Lee, Dennis Cohn, and Bob Denny, three people doing such outstanding things in our game with respect to technology, history, and recognizing some of the great women that have been a part of our game. So thanks again for tuning in. Sit back, relax, and enjoy part two of the show. Okay, coming up next is a lady that is doing so many fantastic things in and around our game. An amazing junior and college career. Started out on the LPGA Tour, did some fantastic things getting through Q School, and then starting up her own businesses, which is going to absolutely revolutionize our game and our lives. And that is Jihei Lee. Before I bring her into the show, I want to remind you about our friends over at 2Under. 2Under men's performance briefs are the unofficial underwear of the PGA, Ryder Cup, and President's Cup teams, and are sold in over 3,000 golf pro shops and golf specialty retailers nationwide. Ricky Fowler is their global ambassador, and over 50 other PGA, Korn Ferry, and Champions Tour players wear them. Just to mention a few, they are David Toms, Jerry Kelly, Justin Thomas, William McGirt, Scott McCarron, and Chris DeMarco. The Joey Pouch technology provides the ultimate male asset management, delivering maximum comfort from the tee box to the boardroom to the bedroom. Go to 2under.com to check out the bundle specials that offer substantial discounts for being a Next on the Tee listener. That's the number 2, UNDR.com. 2Under, performance in your pants.
Every January, PGA Tour Superstore pros meet every manufacturer, learn about the latest equipment, log thousands of hours of training, and together hit over 100,000 balls, all so they can get you the perfect fit.
Okay, now making her Next on the Tee debut with me is Jihei Lee. Let me give you some background on her. She is from Seoul, South Korea, played her college golf at Yale, where she helped them win the Ivy League championships in 2003 and 2006. As a senior, she took sixth place at the Lady Hoya Invitational. After graduating from Yale, she joined the Futures Tour, and in 2008, she finished tied for 12th at the LPGA Q School and earned her LPGA Tour card. She played out there on tour and on the Ladies European Tour through 2011, officially retired from playing golf in 2014. She worked for a while as an assistant for Michelle Wee. Then she went back to school and earned her MBA from the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania. She also served as the Director of Business Strategy for Topgolf. Now she is the CEO and owner of a company called Sportsbox AI, which has developed AI-enabled marker lists, 3D motion capture, and analysis technology, and I couldn't be more thrilled that I get to have her with me this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Jihei, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Chris.
Jihei, I want to start by going back to the beginning with you, at least in the game of golf, because I read that your parents saw you swing a plastic bat at the age of 8, and the following week they took you to a driving range, got you set up with some clubs and a coach, and the next thing you know, you're going there every day after school to practice. Is that how it all got started for you?
I mean, pretty much sums it up. I was a really athletic kid growing up, and my older sister, who, you know, started playing the piano when she was 3 or 4, she and I were very, very different, like opposites. And I grew up very athletic, and I ran, I jump roped, I did everything. And when they got a plastic bat in my hands, I took a full swing at it. They were like, "Oh, wow. That's a real swing." And so they couldn't wait to get me on the golf course. So that's what happened.
I also heard, again, at the age of 8, your parents told you to find your way to practice every day, figure out how to get there. And that seems like something that's pretty darn challenging for someone who's 8 years old.
Yeah. Living in Seoul, South Korea, like city of 15 million people. And you know, even back in 1990 or whatever that was, we had thousands of bus and subway lines going in every which direction. And, you know, I didn't know which bus to take. But I
at
still
8 years
remember
old.
To this day. Yeah. And they didn't teach me because they didn't take the bus. They had their cars. So they themselves had no idea what buses would take me to my destination. It's just kind of trial and error for me. And I still remember the bus numbers that would take me to my destination, the buses that took me to the wrong side of the city, like across the river. And to this day, I still remember the right buses.
You played on the boys team for a while in high school and in a few AJGA events, but the game hadn't become a focus in your life at that point. Talk about the other things that you were interested in that made you walk away from the game for a while after your freshman year at Yale.
Yeah, it was, freshman year at Yale, I loved being in college. I loved the whole experience. And it was the first time in my life where I like actually felt like I got to ask myself the question, do I want to keep playing golf? You know, before college, I felt like it was just a thing that was supposed to be part of my life and never questioned it. And then I got to college and I started making some decisions for myself and thought, wow, like, why am I playing golf? Do I actually like this? Do I enjoy this? Do I want to keep doing this? Is this going to add value in my life after college? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I want to do other things. And I thought, going to Yale, looking at all my peers, they either were going to be doctors, lawyers, or bankers. And I was like, none of those things require golf. So why don't I leave this thing behind? I've done it enough. I've gotten to whatever, as high as achieving as I want to be in this game and got me to a great school. I'm good. So I left the game for a while. I ended up going abroad to China, loving that experience. Did other things on campus, did the whole college experience. And then after I got a job in investment banking, of course, my senior year, I was like, wait, I'm done with all my credits. I have a job. I've literally got no obligations. I'm literally bored out of my mind. Maybe it would be fun to go back and to play golf again. So senior spring, I went back to the team, played, and we actually won the Ivy Championships that year. And we went to NCAAs and my game was intact. I think I was like middle of the pack at the regionals when I literally did not know where my clubs were for 2.5 years, you know, prior to that. And so I was like, you know what, maybe I'm kind of good at golf and didn't give it enough of a shot. And, you know, so I kind of rescinded on my offer to go to Hong Kong, to do investment banking, to make money in life. And decided to turn pro after college. So,
you went through one of the all-time great LPGA Q School classes back in 2008. Michelle Wee was in that class. Stacey Lewis was in that class. Amy Yang was a part of that class. You finished 12th with 5 really great rounds of golf. What do you remember about that week?
First, I broke 70 for the first time at Q School.
Is that right?
If you can believe that. I've had the most unremarkable golf career, period, but like up until that point, never really won anything, never thought I would amount to anything in golf, and like, including my scores. I was a horrendous putter, never thought I'd have to spend more than 30 minutes on the putting green before going out to play. And like anything outside of 5-footer, I looked at it and I was like, all right, how do I nestle this up to the hole and 2-putt. And so to break 70 was a big deal for me. And first round I shot 4-under and I was like, oh my God, like what have I just done? This is the craziest thing that's ever happened to me. If you could imagine, right? And so that was a memorable moment. And final round, you know, like by some miracle, I didn't crumble after that 4-under. I just kind of kept steady. Didn't have any blow up holes, just kind of kept steady and I kept myself in it. And I knew that if I could put together a decent round, like an even par round, I would be in on the fifth day. And so fifth round, final round, of course, it's pouring down rain. It's like 45 degrees outside and it's like blowing 30. It was the worst weather I've ever played golf in. And first hole is this kind of par 4. Dogleg left with water on the left, and you have to carry some part of the water in order to have like a mid iron into the green. I was playing with a good friend of mine, Sunny, who is a better player than I. She went to UNLV, amazing, amazing golfer. She gets up there and hits 2 in the water because the wind was like directly into. Like, there was, like, I mean, the ball didn't even get close to the lane, right? Taking the normal line. And so, yeah, it was that kind of day. So I had driver 3-wood and somehow made par on the first hole.
Wow.
It was that kind of day. And it was just a battle the whole day. But I kind of fought through, just slugged it out. I think I chipped in for a birdie on the fourth hole to kind of like stabilize my emotions. And then on the last hole, I mean, by then, like, I was like, I think I was like one under or even, and I like kind of knew that I was in. I just had like one more shot into the green. It was like 145 yards. So I like hit a choked 7 and the shot hit the pin and landed like 2 feet.
Wow.
And my caddy turns to me. She's like, welcome to the LPGA tour. And it was like, it was this moment. I never, ever, ever thought it would be possible. And the best part was my dad was watching the whole time, like walking.
Wow.
Every single hole. It was really a cool moment.
No doubt.
Yeah.
When you played out on the Futures Tour, another thing I read about you is you talk about learning what real pressure is. And you said, try standing over a 3-foot putt, knowing that making it is the difference between being able to afford rent and not be able to afford rent. Talk about having to deal with pressure like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, now that I'm an entrepreneur and I talk to other entrepreneurs, we share stories about how much pressure there is day to day, you know, making the right decisions and how hard it is to raise money and all this stuff. I'm like, you know what? Nothing is as hard as standing over a 3-footer on the cut line. Like, nothing. Like, I can't think of anything harder than that. Knowing that you have to make it, otherwise you make $0. And so, like, in a lot of ways, I look back on what I had to do as a player, and I feel, you know, much more prepared to do what I'm doing. So
let's talk about that, doing what you're doing. Talk about what the inspiration was for you to start Sportsbox AI.
Yeah, so, you know, I went from golf to representing Michelle to, you know, business school, then Topgolf. And Topgolf was a great 5 years of experience working with technology and learning about, you know, how to properly serve customers, how to build a business. And by the time I got to like kind of the fifth year at Topgolf, I was ready to do something on my own. And when I came across what my now co-founder and chief technology officer, Sam Menaker, was building, I immediately saw the potential to provide something super valuable to all golfers. And specifically the thought was, hey, if you can answer the question of what happened in my swing between that perfect shot or the multiple perfect shots I hit on the range to that ball that went like 40 yards left, you know, like that duck hook into the trees on the first tee. Like, what did I do specifically between those two swings to produce such vastly different results? Like, if you can tell me that, then you have solved golf. And so that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to get down to the truth and the why of golf and like helping people solve that mystery. And so, yeah, that was really the inspiration, helping people get there. And kind of extrapolate that out a little bit. Like, I don't care how many times you show me Rory McIlroy's swing, I cannot replicate that. Like, I don't care how many lessons I take with that as the model. You tell me how he does it, you show me how he does it, I can't do it. But I know I am capable. My swing is capable of producing great shots for a period of time. I've done it for 2 weeks, 4 weeks, months at a time. I know I'm capable. Just tell me how to do that more frequently and more consistently by comparing me to my best swing. And if I can do that with a product, then truly, I think we can help everybody play better golf. So that was the inspiration.
All right. So let's take that a step further, because talk about what Sportsbox AI does and how it can help us with marrying instructional content to then being able to go out and execute that content in our swing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that really is the crux of it, is whether you have taken a lesson from your coach or you watched some tip online. Watching it and understanding what to do is a one thing, but being able to execute it and actually do it with your own body is a whole another thing. Just as, you know, in let's say in fitness, like we all know that we're not supposed to eat certain things and we're supposed to work out a certain way. Do we execute it? No. Right. There's a vast difference between, like, I mean, if it stopped at learning and knowing, then we would all be fitness models. Right. And so same thing with golf, like knowledge is one thing. Assessment is another thing, correctly assessing what you're doing and get the gap between what you're doing versus the ideal is another thing. And being able to correctly train to be able to execute it is another thing. So where we come in is turning what is a visual cue. Let's say I want to see you move this way or sway a little bit less or turn a little bit more, or a feeling like, hey, can you feel a little less tilt? Which is completely subjective. What may feel like more tilt to me may be zero, right? Or 10 degrees to you, right? Like, and we're turning that into something objective and concrete, like something measurable. So when I take your swing in the before and I want you to get to 10 degrees more, we can measure and give you the feedback on the swings you're making so that every swing you take in your practice has a feedback component to tell you either you did it right or you need to do a lot more of that. So it'll accelerate the feedback loop for golfers that are focused on, you know, changing their movement.
So when we're using Sportsbox AI, give us a visual. What does it look like? What does that video look like so that we can see what that model is and how far we need to tilt or turn or all that sort of stuff?
Yeah. So it marries visuals with data. So imagine just your average, you know, phone app where it allows you to take a video. We do the exact same thing, point and shoot, record. We even have an auto recording if you don't want to, you know, press record on your own. And that video within 5 to 7 seconds turns into an avatar visual. So a 3D robot avatar that you can turn into something you can visualize from multiple different angles, even if you take that video from one angle. So turn it around 360, you know, see it from up top, like you've got a camera over your head or below you, like you're standing on glass, right? And it marries movement to data, like chest turn, like how far did you rotate your upper body? Measured in degrees, or, you know, how much did your, you know, head move side to side, which would be measured in head sway, so that at every frame or every kind of millisecond of the movement, you know exactly what these body parts are doing.
So now the scary part to me, because I saw you talking a little bit more about the technology, and now it can create a 3D hologram of our movement, where now we're into the Star Wars era where we no longer need R2-D2 to get to project a 3D hologram of ourselves?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. We've even, you know, experimented with those VR headsets where you could basically walk into like your 3D avatar, like into that body, or let's say Rory's 3D avatar, and you can walk into that body and move, you know, do your swing and see how, where your hands are versus like Rory's hands in 3D space. That's all possible.
So to your point a little bit ago, you can't swing like Rory. Well, now maybe you can.
Yeah, maybe.
So
that's enough reps.
Yeah. So talk about that, because I'm guessing this is to your point about reps. If I'm using Sportsbox AI, and I'm seeing my avatar, and then I'm comparing that avatar to whatever player out on tour that I may choose to want to swing like. But if I'm just going through reps, whether it's in my own house, in my backyard, out on the driving range, boy, I'm thinking based on your technology that you guys have perfected, I could really make leaps and bounds and actually maybe start playing like some of those guys.
Yeah. And I always say, you know, a picture is worth a thousand words, right? You know, if you instead of describing things, you show them a picture. I think data is worth a thousand pictures. So instead of showing you pictures, describe it in data, like in inches and degrees. You've got information that is a thousand times more valuable than just a picture alone. So practicing with video alone is incomparable to practicing with data-driven feedback. So each rep is worth a thousand reps without the data. This is kind of what I've realized practicing with Sportsbox when I'm getting feedback on, did I do this? Did I turn 95 degrees? Did I get to my lead side on time? Like, if I'm getting that, I can marry that with the feel that I just like I had to produce that movement.
Yeah.
And that settles into my kind of nervous system a lot faster than making a movement and wondering, did I do it? Right. Like that, it's just amazing how much faster you can improve and own your swing when there's data to validate what you're doing.
Yeah. So, and it's something that you said a few minutes ago, because a lot of times when we're practicing out on the practice range or whatever we're doing, even when we're playing, yeah, I hit a great shot. My next shot, I hit terrible. Like, what was the difference? Why did I make such a poor swing the second time when I made such a great swing the first time? Now, based on the things that you're able to show us, we can see exactly why that second shot was so much worse. Is that right?
Yeah. And I'll give you another good example. I mean, this is a different level of golfer, obviously. And I'm not saying that this experience is valuable only for that type of golfer. But so, you know, Dana Dahlquist, who's been using Sportsbox for forever, and he's been working with Bryson. And so Bryson's been measuring his swing on Sportsbox for the last year or so, leading up to his 58 last year. Remember?
Yes.
And so he has his swing from that day when he shot 58, and that's his like gold standard. And a few months later, he was kind of struggling. I think he was hitting a couple funky shots, and like they looked at his swing then versus his 58 swing and realized that his, you know, side bend numbers were a little different. And because of that little clue, that little breadcrumb, they were able to diagnose that his ball position had moved, which made him side bend a little more or less. And so immediately after that, you know, realization, he was able to make the change in his setup and like, bam, he got it back. So like, that's a really good example of how do we get back to our best swing as fast as possible. Because we all have our tendencies. We all get off from, you know, our good swings to do what we're comfortable doing. So Sportsbox is kind of the roadmap back to your best swing.
Just a couple more before I let you go. And I saw Jonathan Yarwood, one of the top instructors in our game and a guy who's been on this show, talking about playing around with all the data that your software provides. Did a short video about it last week. How exciting is it for you to see some of the top instructors in the game you just mentioned a moment ago too? Now people are starting to adopt this on a broader level. That's got to be very fulfilling for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was just looking through our ambassador list, and we have not just ambassadors, but investors who put their own money into supporting the company, like, you know, Sean Foley and David Ledbetter and Michelle Wee and, you know, Marina Alex, Mel Reed, like Patty Tavitadakit. These people all put their own money into Sportsbox. To know that I have their support and like full belief that this is what's needed for the industry, and you know, we've got the right team to you know, realize the kind of the goals and the vision is amazing. Like I can't believe that I'm sitting here saying those things even. And to have to be able to go to places where, like, you know, my husband actually went to I think it was Menlo Country Club, somewhere down the road here in the Bay Area. And the head pro there like ran out to the range and was like, "Hey, your wife, she's the golf avatar lady, right?" And my husband was like, "Yeah, I guess. I mean, her name's Jihei, but like, I guess she could go by golf avatar lady." So it's cool and it's fulfilling to be able to create a product that, you know, is valuable to the world of golf.
I bet. Yeah. GA, how can people check out all this great technology that you're bringing to our lives and follow both you and Sportsbox AI, whether it's online or it's on social media?
Yeah, best place is either on Instagram at Sportsbox AI, one word, or, you know, look us up on YouTube. We have a lot of cool, interesting educational content created by, you know, our ambassadors and some of our team members. So check those out. I think your audience would really like the kind of content we put out there.
I bet. Well, GA, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come and tell us all about it. This technology is absolutely mind-blowing. I'm looking forward to watching you as you guys continue to grow and do more and more, and then taking advantage of what Sportsbox is bringing into our game. So thank you so much for being here. I hope we get the opportunity to catch up with you perhaps a little bit later on in the year.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Chris, for having me.
You bet. That is GA Lee. And I tell you what, folks, this Sportsbox AI stuff is off the chain great. When you take a look at, she talked about Avatar. When you take a look at what that does for you and taking a look at your swing and comparing it to others and finding out the places where you continually to go wrong. And then she talked about feel during the course of the conversation. When you can start feeling what you're doing wrong and then seeing it play out in front of you. I mean, my goodness, the thought that one day any of us could swing like Rory McIlroy, she talked about at the beginning, how, you know, I can't swing like Rory McIlroy. Well, guess what? After spending some time with this stuff, you just might. And that is an unbelievable tool that's going to help us play so much better. I tell you, I'm guessing, you guys have heard me say this on the show for years. It takes 10 years just to get bad at golf. I think she's going to lop off about 9 of those years by being able to do what this software is going to bring into our game. I'm very excited to check it out and see more about it. And like I say, hopefully we get the opportunity to catch up with her a little bit later on in the year and hear about more advances that they're working on. Coming up next are a couple of guys that are doing great things out there in our game for developing caddy programs, bringing more young people and our golf communities together, shining a spotlight on areas of our game that should have had a spotlight a long, long time ago, plus doing great things for our veterans as well. And that is Dennis Cohn and Bob Denny. Before I get to those guys, let's talk about our friends over at Squares Golf. And folks, do you sway and you're off balance in your golf swing? You know what? It could be your shoes. A golf shoe needs structure to provide stability and reduce sway. How can you tell if your shoes lack structure and are hurting your game? If you can hold your shoes by the toe and heel and twist it, toss it. Squares was designed for the perfect balance of structure and comfort. Isn't it time you tried Squares? Try the new Speedbolt at squares.com. That's squairz.com. Looking for the ultimate Myrtle Beach golf experience? Well, it's only a click away. Check out the two-play special at two of America's most awarded public golf courses, Caledonia Golf and Fish Club and True Blue Golf Club. They are low country masterpieces featuring two iconic Mike Strantz designs. Play these two incredible courses for one great price. Visit CaledoniaGolfAndFishClub.com to learn more about the two-play special and book your tee time today. Again, that's CaledoniaGolfAndFishClub.com. All right, now joining me here on Next on the Tee are two guys, talk about doing great things, that have done great things in our sport for years, and that is Dennis Cohn and Bob Denny. Dennis caddied out on the PGA Tour for several years. He founded the Professional Caddies Association. He also served as the president of the Junior Golf Association of Central Florida. He was inducted into the Caddy Hall of Fame back in 2011. He's written a couple of wonderful books titled Think Like a Caddy, Play Like a Pro, and Mastering Golf's Toughest Shots. Bob was a fantastic writer and historian for the PGA of America prior to his retirement a few years ago. He is the PGA Historian Emeritus for the PGA of America. He has been a huge proponent of civil rights and has done some amazing work around that in and out of our game. And I couldn't be more thrilled that I get to have both guys with me here this week on Next on the Tee. Hey, Dennis. Hey, Bob. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for letting us be with you.
Thank you again very much. And I just got off the phone with Donnie Hammond. He told me to tell you hello.
Well, I appreciate that very much, Donnie. He's a fantastic friend of the show.
We're heading over to the launch at our camp on Thursday. It's the last launch of the heavy rocket. We're 14 miles away. So weather permitting, I'll have him out there catching a few fish and thinking about you.
Well, I appreciate that, Dennis. Dennis, I want to start with you tonight. And I know you've been doing a lot of work with our veterans here in the U.S., plus over in the U.K. and Canada. Talk about the Caddy School for Soldiers that you've been working on.
Well, Bob I've read about it, and all of a sudden, my friend Bob, who's wrote one of the first stories about us in 1999, thank you, Bob, incredible writer, and I'm so blessed to have him join our new company that we're going to announce tonight on your show. Our mission is certainly to help. My brother was a veteran in Vietnam, and we no longer have him with us. And Bob is very passionate about the unsung heroes. And that's kind of why we all came together, and kind of complements the Michael Bolton song, which we'll discuss in a minute. But Bob can discuss what he's doing with that in Scotland. But I'm totally committed to help Renee Powell with her program of women veterans, because everybody forget there's also women veterans, too, in this world.
Yeah, Bob, back up what Dennis was just saying. Talk about the work that you guys are doing together.
Okay. First off, great to be with you again, Chris. And the one true tradition of the game that never changes is the relationship between the golfer and the caddy. And it was always the oldest tradition. It was always considered a sacred relationship, because the golfer can reach out in moments of crisis and moments of confidence, of getting a second opinion from someone who's with him. That's the only time the golf is really allowing advice on a golf course. And what it boils down to in today's numbers is there's tradition and there's education. And I believe that the Professional Caddies Association worldwide is a great opportunity. It's still an untapped area for most of the companies, charitable organizations, and many clubs throughout the world. So there's a value to it, Chris. And I also believe that the number of the things I've done in exploring the world's first caddy school for soldiers, which is in St. Andrews, I'll explain that in a little bit longer when we come back to it. But that's involved giving opportunities to those that have suffered through PTSD and come back in a mainstream and be a part of helping others and finding a second life through golf as a caddy.
And Bob, you're also doing some work with Renee Powell, who is the daughter of Bill Powell, who was the first African-American to design, build, and own a golf course here in the U.S. The course is Clearview Golf Club up in East Canton, Ohio. Renee played out on the PGA Tour for a little while. She's now the head professional there at Clearview. But talk about the work you're doing with her, along with our female veterans.
Well, I'm glad you let me talk a little bit more about Renee and Clearview Golf Club. They through donations, they built a beautiful education building on site, and they have a museum contained within about, which explains a lot about their family, from William Powell, Marcella Powell, Billy, and then Larry, who's still a lifetime member of the Golf Course Superintendents Association. Renee has done a wonderful job of trying to expand the knowledge and the diversity of what this game can be. She's embraced by those in the UK, as well as a number of speaking opportunities around the country. But the biggest thing is she's trying to keep that golf course and historic place alive, and it's trying to get an irrigation system, believe it or not, after all these years, that would sustain it for the next 50 years. So that's important, to try to get the fundraising to keep a historic treasure such as Clearview Golf Club. And I'm doing everything I can, Chris, to try to educate and open up doors and let people know that it's a part of our culture that we surely don't want to miss and want to keep it alive, because that family did so much to open doors in the game of golf.
And Bob, Bill Powell was given the 2009 PGA Distinguished Service Award by the PGA of America. Were you a part of making that happen?
Yes, I was a part of the coverage of it. I remember standing near the stage with Franco Harris, who became a part of the Clearview Legacy Foundation for many years before he passed away recently, and a number of others, Alan Page, the Supreme Court Justice Minnesota, and he and the former Viking, as you know, legend, that they all were there converging to try to support Bill and what he did. And it was a remarkable story. The PGA finally gave honors to Bill, and after all those years, became a full-time PGA member after all the problems we had with, as you know, the Caucasian clause in the bylaws. But what it boiled down to, it was just a recognition of what that family has done for American golf. And I think I can't underscore it even more than that. Renee, in 2011, accepted a challenge that I called her to say, get a women's program. And she did get a women's program, and she ran with it. And it's now the only all-year-round women's program in the country. She's inspired other chapters throughout the country.
And Bob, you did also some research. Speaking of education, you did some research on Horton Smith and learned some not so great things about him, which led to renaming the Horton Smith Award to the PGA Professional Development Award. Talk about what that award is and how you got it renamed.
Well, it's sort of a, you know, it's a tough chapter. I admit it wasn't my intent to go out and to go against Mr. Smith. I do know that his work in education was important for the PGA of America. A day ago, it was the anniversary of him winning the 1934 Masters. So he's an outstanding player. But it boiled down to this, you know, who is going to defend against the Caucasian clause being in the PGA of America's bylaws? When was it going to end? It went from 1934 to 1961. And the time he spent in office, they had a number of controversial episodes between Bill Spiller, bringing in Joe Louis at the San Diego Open, et cetera, et cetera. And it just was a period where there wasn't anybody taking leadership and ending that bad chapter and allowing the African-Americans and others, from even Hispanics, have a chance to get a job in the golf industry. So it was a very uncomfortable time. We know that there is forces at play that couldn't overturn that, but it boiled down to who is defending it and who is not defending it. And that was a difficult situation. And, you know, I was in the middle of a lot of difficult times trying to do the research, but I did the best I can to produce what I saw were the facts. I talked to the reporter, Al Barco, who was the last to interview Bill Spiller, and he got Bill's entire testimony on record. I also talked to Jack Burke before he passed away about 8 years ago, and Jack told me that he felt that Bill Spiller had plenty of reason to be upset. And as it turned out, Horton Smith appointed Jack Burke a member of the tournament committee 2 days before they had the big meeting in San Diego. So a lot of forces came into play. And as you know, by reading history, Charlie Sifford was the man who was a catalyst out on the tour to actually turn the tide. And with the attorneys generals around the United States, they got things turned around where open membership was the turning of the tide. And in 1961, in November, they had the annual meeting, and the PGA of America eradicated a bad chapter of its bylaws.
Bob, talk about who Madeline Mucci Turner is.
What a lady. What a lady. And she later became not only she was a caddy and a great young player in the UGA, the United Golfers Association, because she couldn't compete in the regular public events because they wouldn't allow her because of the color of her skin. Her mother was an outstanding player in the UGA as well. And Mucci went on to become a martial arts and physical trainer for the FBI. And she earned her way into the recognition of so many things. She helped Renee Powell with her programs during the summertime. And Dennis and his team had the good way to find her into the the Caddy Hall of Fame. So it was just a wonderful opportunity for Mucci. She's a tremendous lady, a great representative, always has great stories for us. And I think it's a part of the chapter that it should not go missed in this country.
Dennis, talk about the Blast and Cast Kids program that you've worked to establish.
Well, my big goal last 3 years, I've been the corporate liaison for the Florida Outdoor Writers Association, a 100-year organization here in Florida. And my goal has always been to bring the fishing industry together of 200 million plus, well, actually more than that, together with the golf industry of 58 million golfers and 400 million golf fans, according to Google, together, because we've been doing the Blast and Cast program up until pandemic, or whatever you want to call it, COVID. So we stopped it, and we're going to start it back up. But basically, it's charity catch and release programs at the country clubs on the day they're closed. It's not really a big public event. It's a private event of veterans and caddies and also kids recovering from cancer. And it's a great event. You can Google it in. There's stuff out there, Dennis Cone, PCA, Blasting Cast. But it's much bigger than that, because it's actually, it may be somebody who's never been to a golf course may drive a child out there to an event and look around and say, hey, this is a pretty cool looking little game out here. Maybe I'll take it up one day. And he gets out of his four-wheel drive truck with his shotgun in the back, and he may be playing golf the next week. So there's a win-win. They're kind of mixing it all up. So I think you'll find, if you do the statistics, Bob probably knows better than me, but most of the players on tour, they actually on practice round have their fishing rods with them in their bags, and most of the players fish. I've seen them at TPC fishing and golfing at the same time. So it's a really exciting program. We're now ready to take everything we have, everything worldwide. We want to start out chapters in Blasting Cast, PCA Blasting Cast in the United States. We're going to re-get it going again here in Oak Hill, Florida. And then we want to get also go offshore, and we want to offer 49% of the brand of PCA to every country to get a proper investor, a vintage group of people that have the same like thoughts about what we want to do about getting the kids out there on a golf course and chasing golf cars and whether being a caddy and getting them to learn maybe an education program and help finance them through the Michael Bolton song that we'll be doing for charities also. So it's a natural mix. I think fishing and golf come together, and we're on it. We're on it. Six years in the making, and it's going to happen this year.
Dennis, you've mentioned Michael Bolton's name a couple of times. He's an avid golfer. He got the idea from you to start a foundation to help raise money for caddies and their families. What was it like partnering with Michael Bolton and getting that foundation going?
Well, it was pretty wild. Amy Grant's agent actually was trying to help me build this song for Bruce Edwards before he passed away. And I got a call a few weeks before Bruce passed away. I said, Dennis, you got a winner. This guy named David Vincent Williams and Michael, they did this song for you. They're going to give it to you. It's called 5 Feet Away. It's by the heroes in our lives that are 5 feet away from us that push us to be the best we can be, that deserves joy as much as you and me. It's about every unsung hero in the world. And so the song came together. We gave it. We played it at Bruce's funeral. And then a few weeks later, I ran into some people that knew Michael Bolton. They said, Dennis, this is a Michael Bolton song. You mind if I call Michael? I was on the golf course up at the Horry Pro event up in Nashville. And they said, sure, call Michael. And sure enough, he picked up the phone, called Michael. Long story short, Michael wasn't there, left a message. 2 weeks later, Michael called us and said, I came back from California and my caddy that I knew well passed away in our foursome when I was there, and I was so moved by it. And I saw to myself coming back in the airplane, I want to write a caddy song. And I get back home and I find this, all this stuff you sent me on my desk, and I played this song. I love it. It's great. I wouldn't change the thing. What can I do for you? I said, I knew he was a big softball player. I said, just let's knock it out of the ballpark. So over 2 years of doing it, from getting the Nashville cast to do it in Kia C and the key of B, and he wanted it done in key of C. And anyway, we got it out. We've been sitting on it, waiting for the PGA Tour and PGA of America to release it with us. It never has happened. So we're going to release it ourselves this year to all charities to help domestic violence and help charities, families in need. It's a great. And Michael is recovering from brain surgery. It was had in December, and God bless him. And I know he's doing well, but we look forward to seeing him out there singing real soon.
And Dennis, you've talked about kids and kids becoming caddies. Talk about the Professional Caddy Association and what you guys are offering this year in order to get more kids out there and involved in caddy programs and help bring the golf world together a little bit.
Well, it's more online. We've got a new website. All of our websites are old because, to be honest with you, you know, my wife, who was doing all that 9 years ago, went back and became a nurse and got her master's in nursing. So I'm running too many companies. In fact, and we're looking for somebody to step in and help me and Bob in this great mission. And we have somebody else. I can't announce the name right now, but you will know them, and I'll tell you tomorrow. But we got another third partner coming in with this mission, and we're looking for other people to join us to take the PCA across offshore and to also endorse different companies all over the world with our brand. You know, we've always kind of endorsed big companies and got good money for it, but now we want to endorse everybody. If somebody's got a widget in Michigan and it's a good guy and it's got a good widget, we want to endorse it and get our logo on their website and vice versa. We want to help them grow. And in doing that, the funds will help go back into junior golf programs, go back into Western Golf Association for scholarships, and also into programs where kids can become caddies. There's a lot of great caddy program. When I started this back in the 90s, there was very few caddy programs. Now there's all kind of caddy programs for kids and ways to get to caddies, how to get educated. But we are the oldest and longest running, I would say, in the United States and the world of caddy programs. We started in 1992.
Bob, I want to take what Dennis has been saying a little bit further. Talk about the opportunity that the Professional Caddies Association has to enhance the game, not just here in the U.S., but with organizations around the world, really.
Well, I go back to what that song is, you know, and I listen to the lyrics, and it has so much shelf life. I want to use those words, shelf life. It can expand to different ways for public infomercials and so forth, and it has a way to adapt to any organization's ability to try to push their product out. That's the blend of it all. And that to me means a lot, because just the word caddy and a golfer doesn't do much. It doesn't really generate as much as it should. But if you watched some of the people I've watched who've come from really hard circumstances and got jobs as caddies, it's turned their lives around. And it's truly, and they've been able to inspire younger people as well. We all know about the Evans Foundation in Chicago and how successful they've been over the years with their programs. This is a little different element of it. And Dennis is absolutely passionate about it from the day one. And I've also been part of it and very passionate about what its opportunities are, Chris. And I think if we can blend this song with the programs, I think you can find that there's a natural fit. And then he talks about the outdoorsman of it all. Well, that's another element of it all. But truly, the caddy profession is one that should never be lost in our lexicon. I think it's one that's really important to build character. I think it's built good for education. And it helps a young person get a step-by-step level as they grow to make this a game of a lifetime.
Amen to that.
Hey, Chris, I got to say now, this is our 25th year of the Caddy Hall of Fame. And
yes.
Yep, 25 years. And I can't tell you yet, but I'll tell you next month we come back on the show who's going to be our international PGA Tour star that will hopefully get inducted this year in Chicago. And it's pretty exciting. And I just found out I can announce this on the 8th of April at Augusta, Georgia. Marlon Lundell, who's been working with me, and Carl Jackson, 2.5 years, mainly with Carl. It's about telling the Carl Jackson story, and they're going to have the documentary out in a private viewing with some of the major people like Netflix, Golf Channel, NBC, CBS. They're looking for somebody to help launch the Carl Jackson story. If you don't know much about it, you can Google it in. There is a trailer out there, and I'm so happy. Carl, by the way, and Fluff, we're all the spiritual leaders of the Caddy Hall of Fame, and they were in our first class of 1999. And Carl was my guy I'd go to. I'd get four or five names, and I didn't know these guys. And I'd go to Carl. I said, "What about this guy?" And he said, "No, Dennis, no, no, no." And Flameway with Rabbit, he did the same thing. So Carl's, I love Carl Jackson. Worked for Ben Crenshaw for many years. All of his wins. God bless you, Carl. Love you, and we're behind you 100%. And look forward to seeing the documentary.
Man, that's awesome. And speaking of induction, Bob, you wrote the recommendation letter for this guy to get into the Caddy Hall of Fame. Tom Dreesen, who's come on this show a couple of times, read that letter, during the induction ceremony. Talk about getting Dennis into the Hall.
Well, I didn't think it was that hard to write. I think it sort of wrote itself, to be honest with you.
Yeah, thank you.
And when you have a man who lives and dies with this with one goal in mind, it's in their DNA. And it's, I found those people in life who have the passion within their blood, which makes me so excited about continuing to write about the people of golf, because, Chris, I believe that golf is the largest extended family in sports and always will. Know.
And a small family, too.
Dennis, what was that like for you? What was that night like for you, seeing that, you know, we get this wonderful letter written by Bob. You get Tom Dreesen, one of the all-time great comedians, up there doing the induction and reading that letter. What was that evening like for you?
I met Tom at Michael Bolton's event, and then I found out his story, which is on the internet. You can look it up. And he had an incredible caddy story from Chicago. It was humbling. You know, when you start something and you get inducted into it, you don't take it. But now, looking back on it, I'm extremely proud, and I'm extremely proud of my grandkids. Tell me they're proud, and that's more important than anything.
There you go. Dennis, for our listeners who are now intrigued about all the wonderful things you and Bob are doing and they want to get more involved, how can they do that?
Yeah, that's what they need to do is go to our website, pcahq.com, and you can just send us a note. You can see some of this stuff. We're looking for somebody to redo a new website for us. I'm learning. You like this, Chris. I've been in AI and app school for 6 months, and I'm going crazy. And every time I think I got it figured out, I think I'm going to call Jaylene and get her on top of it. I really liked what she's doing with this Sky Vault, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's really what it's all about. And I think we're putting it out there. I'm not going to try to build the big mega website that I want to do. I'm just going to put all our intellectual properties out there, make them available and get some cash flow in. And we're looking for new leaderships, and, you know, I just need 4 or 5 people that know what they're doing with all this high tech stuff to help us go forward.
Well, Dennis, it's always a privilege getting to spend some time with you. You're one of the great people in our game, so deserving of being in the Caddy Hall of Fame. You should be in the Golf Hall of Fame, the World Golf Hall of Fame, as far as I'm concerned. You're just a wonderful individual. You've done so much for our game, so much for inclusion into our game. I can't thank you enough for all you've done and for being a part of the show again this week.
Well, I appreciate that. And like I say, our two books that we did, and the third one's in the works. I've got to Scotland for a couple of weeks. You may have to go with me. We really feel like that there may be an opportunity for a caddy to get in the Golf Hall of Fame one day. Everybody's pushing for it. But, you know, we have our own Hall of Fame. We have a Hall of Fame that you know, Charles Schwab went in a couple of years ago because he was a caddy in Santa Barbara. You look at our list in the Caddy Hall of Fame, the incredible people that are in there right now. And, Peter Lynch just went in just recently last year, and Tony Navarro went in. You know, it's just a list. We have over 50 people, top names on the short list, and I'm just blessed to be a part of this thing growing. And thank you, Western Golf Association, the Evans Scholarship Foundation, for keeping it going and making it my dream come true.
Well, Dennis, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and be a part of the show, my friend. I hope we get the opportunity to hear more about what you're doing, get some of these updates here, a little bit more about some of the other programs that you mentioned a little bit earlier on. You guys are doing fantastic work. I'd love to catch up with you again soon.
Not a problem. If you want to get a free signed book, ask your listeners to tell you how many majors Bruce Edwards won with Tom Watson, and I'll sign a book and mail it to you.
All right. We'll get that done. Take care, Dennis. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up again soon.
God bless you, brother.
See you, Dennis. That is the great Dennis Cohn, folks. And like I say, joining him a little bit earlier as well was Bob Denny. Those guys are just relentless doing great things for the game of golf and growing our game. That is sort of a buzz phrase, right? Over the last couple of years, growing the game. Well, these two guys have been out there doing just that. These caddy programs, and Dennis has been a part of the show for the last several years, right? This is the fifth time I had an opportunity to have him as part of the show, going all the way back to the early days when this show got started. But the caddy programs that he has worked on, the inclusion, the things that he has done to bring more people into our game, educate people about our game, and then obviously being an advocate for the caddies. I mean, look, caddies and players are a team out there. I know the players are the ones executing the shot, but they couldn't do the things that they do. They couldn't get to the heights that they've reached. if it wasn't for the partnership that they have with caddies, and I've been blessed to have so many great caddies on this show, Dennis obviously being one of the best all time. But look, the work that he has done with all of the young caddy programs and trying to get that in there. Bob talked about how we can't let caddies disappear from our game. And where do you learn? You learn as a kid getting out there and working with folks that are out there in the clubs, getting out there, carrying the clubs, learning the golf course. And what does that do? And Dennis sort of alluded to this, but what does that do? That brings more people into our game. It ingrains the love of our game with the young players. And then also could also bring their families, their parents, and others into the game as well when they are dropping their kids off to be a part of these things. It's just fantastic all the way around. It's a win-win for everybody. Can't thank Dennis enough. Can't thank Bob enough for coming and being a part of the show. We'll catch up with those guys a little bit later on this year to hear what's going on.
Frustrated with your golf game? Imagine playing with total confidence. Join LPGA Pro and mindset expert Debbie O'Connell for her Conquer Your Golf Mind Challenge. Bill cut six strokes and Lori is club champion. What's your goal? Click the link or text NEXT to 727-339-0106. Use code NEXT for $20 off. Your tee time for transformation is now. Will you take the shot?
All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on this edition of Next on the Tee. My sincere thanks again to David Peoples, Tom Pertzer, G. Hay Lee, Dennis Cohn, and Bob Denny for joining me this week. Scheduled to join me next week are former LPGA Tour Commissioner and author Charlie Meacham will be back, as will Dr. Bob Winters in his monthly time slot. Top instructor Martin Chuck is going to make a return visit, as will 2003 PGA champion Sean McKeel. So folks, it's going to be a great show. I hope you'll come back and be a part of it with us. Quick reminder that you can find this show available as a podcast just about anywhere you get your podcast content. In particular, we're out there on the Pittsburgh Tribune Review site. Just go to triblive.com and click on sports. You're going to find the show available on the homepage of the sports section, but you can also find it by then clicking on podcasts, and you're going to find Next on the Tee available front and center for you right there. You can also find the show out on Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audio Boom, and Player.fm. And as always, my sincere thanks to the great folks over at Good Pods for making this show one of their recommended podcasts. So please download their free app and stream your favorite podcast right there on your favorite device. But as always, most of all, my sincere thanks go out to all of you for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate you all so very much. Until next week, hit 'em straight, my friends.